Let's face it, running a construction company can be chaotic. As business owners, we wear a lot of hats and we're constantly putting out fires. Luckily, there's a way to work simpler with BuilderTrend. I'm a huge advocate for using technology to help run AFT, and BuilderTrend is one of the most crucial tools I rely on to keep me on top of every detail. Built just for home builders and remodelers, this is an easy-to-use platform that helps manage all aspects of my business. My team's been using BuilderTrend's project management platform for the last 5 years, and we love that they're always improving and adding new features to make our lives easier. This is something that we've really tried to take on internally to find ways to improve our system every day. BuilderTrend just released a full set of financial services, added new tools like Takeoff to make estimates more accurate, and launched a total rebrand with a new mission to help change the future of construction, and we are on board. To learn more about how BuilderTrend can help calm the chaos in your construction business, visit buildatrend.com/AFT. When you schedule a demo, you'll receive an exclusive 60-day money-back guarantee only available to my podcast listeners. I'm following BuilderTrend into the future in construction. Come on board with us. Don't miss the Contractors Coalition Summit. You can go to contractorscoalitionsummit.com and join us in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Wednesday, May 15th through Sunday, May 19th. This is going to be an incredible event. Again, for all of you builders and designers looking to take your business to the next level, to learn about all things systems, organization, pricing, social media, marketing, how to be a better business owner, all the things that we wish we knew as early business owners many years ago. We're going to speak about that, also give you a Dropbox with all the content, including contracts and other documents that we're using, as well as KPIs, key performance indicators. So don't miss it. It's a huge opportunity. Some amazing vendors will be there as well that you can network with. So again, Wednesday, May 15th through Sunday, May 19th, 2024 in Minneapolis, go to contractorscoalitionsummit.com.
You know, when I have a first meeting with a client, I joke and I'm like, oh, this is our first date. And they kind of giggle. And I'm like, well, I'm not kidding. Like, if we're going to be on a project for a year together, like, we're going to spend some time together. And like, I want to get along with you. So, you know, we're just going to kind of get to know each other in this meeting, and then we'll have a follow-up one and then see how that goes.
So we have Mr. Chris Meekin on today. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks, Brad. Thanks for having me.
Excited to have you. So Chris is the owner of Black Tie Group, and we've been fortunate to spend some time in person and now behind the mic. So glad to have you on.
Thanks. Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, Contractor Coalition Summit was sweet, and like to kind of connect with you and Nick and the team. And yeah, it was cool to be one-on-one and just get to, you know, get to know everybody. It was great.
So what, maybe I'll ask you this then, because I know you are really big into relationships. You're, you know, that's going to be part of the conversation here, is how you built a network. You know, you have your Marine background. So I know that that's played into, you know, organization and systems and training and everything that goes with that. I do want to ask you about how that's played a role in your business success. What made you gravitate or want to go to the summit and kind of be a you know, with your peers and be at that event?
I think I'm a firm believer in like the people that you surround yourself with will help you to elevate. So like, I get super excited when, you know, even locally, if I can get together with a group of entrepreneurs or people that are doing well, and you put five of us in a room, and the amount of ideas that get shared in that short amount of time, it's like you could put, you know, it's how you get a space shuttle on the moon. You're just like, man, I never thought of that. And then, so for me to go there was like, okay, let's network and meet some of the best in the industry and also see who else is doing what across the country. I mean, there was a lot of heavy hitters at the summit, and, you know, I'm still in contact with a few of them. And, you know, the idea around relationships is who knows what those may turn out to be in the future. You know, it could be something regionally with you, or, you know, Nick's kind of in my backyard and, you know, we talk often, and there may be a project in the future that he and I, you know, connect on. So those type of things, although that seem quiet in the beginning, turn into snowball into things down the road.
It's funny you bring that up, because there's a couple points there. When you think locally, there's a builder here, Brady, you know, JD. I've had them both on the podcast, Brady Fan and JD Dwyer. And what's funny is rarely do we compete. On occasion we have, but there's been a couple instances where we've had a client that they're like, hey, you know what? Brady's probably a better fit. AFT, you know, on their side's a better fit. And it's funny how we kind of know whether it be certain, I don't want to say territory, but maybe areas of Phoenix. But more importantly, when you speak about just being around successful people, Chris, and how you pick up these nuggets and information and how that makes you better. One thing that I wish I'd realized early in my career that I do a lot more now is you and I have a lot of clients that have been very successful for a reason, right? That's why they're doing the projects they are with us. And I found that when I speak to them and ask them about their business, about their systems and what made them successful, and it's interesting how they share certain things, even though they're different fields, and how it applies to us in construction.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the people that are successful for a reason. And some of it is systems. Some of it could just be hard work, but you know, that comes at a price too, right? So you look at these people that are doing really, really well and you get to know them and, you know, maybe spend some time with them and you just realize, you know, it may come at a sacrifice. We don't all have all the things. There's no unlimited amount of time. So if you're, you know, working on building a $1 billion business and flying around the country all the time, like you're probably giving up something on the other end, whether it be, you know, personal life or, you know, your health or whatever that is. It's difficult and it's easy to look at someone that's killing it and be like, you know, must be awesome, must be whatever, and then realize they're sacrificing a lot to get there. So yeah, I think there's a new appreciation for that and understanding the reality that comes with that.
How have you used, you mentioned in your network, I know that you have a relationship with architects and designers and realtors. How has that community made impact for you just in your business growth?
It's huge. You know, if you can start to develop relationships with, you know, local real estate agents or a local architect firm, or, you know, just have really good working relationships with your trades or people in the area. You know, we talk about the cost of marketing and all those things, but if you can build those relationships, the marketing is almost free. So if somebody sells a house and they're like, oh, we love the house, we just bought it, but we want to redo the bathroom. And then your friend to the real estate agent that just sold it, oh, I have a perfect guy for you, let me get you in touch. And then they've already kind of greased that wheel with the recommendation. And that opportunity was created through a friendship or a relationship.
Now, with that though, what's interesting is I think a lot of people listen and say, okay, Chris, well, I know the benefit of having a realtor and they're going to think of me, refer me an architect. How have you found success to essentially get in the door and be top of mind and build a relationship outside of maybe just meeting them, you know, passing by the networking event?
Yeah, I think some of that is, you know, being personable and also being interested in what, you know, they're into. There's so much about relationships. And I think about this like with first client meetings or meeting anyone for the first time. And it's like you kind of have to be a better listener than a speaker, and, you know, try to find some common ground, some common connection. And I think I do a good job of in any room, and it could be doctors, it could be elite level business people, it could be, you know, basic concrete work, but you can listen long enough and talk long enough and then kind of be like, oh, there's a connection there. We both like, you know, basketball, or we both like flying, or we both like something around a thing. And then it's like you gravitate towards that and ask some more questions, and that creates, you know, a deeper connection than just, hi, nice to meet you, and like we don't remember each other's name or anything about them, right?
It's funny you say that. Because, you know, I think about, as you were sharing that, you know, my experiences I've had as I've networked, you know, with different, you know, you meet some for the first time, and that common ground, right? Finding something in common is a huge part of that. You know, listening is really important, you know, engaging, asking questions, making them feel that you're really interested. Even at that point where you, someone like you, Chris, it's fairly outgoing, you can make a connection pretty quick, you know. What about after that first meeting? You know, what are some of the steps you've taken to like continue that relationship and to not be over persistent, maybe overbearing, but at the same time, keep that channel open?
I think you just equally refer them. So if I have a client that comes to me and their first question is, you know, do you have an architect? You know, our, my model and your model are a little bit different. And I do like the direction and how you handle yours. So I'm definitely leaning in that direction. But I think when people come to me, it's like, oh, I have an architect for you. And I bring them to that architect. And then so when it comes the other way and they have a client that's already hired them, and then they'll say, oh, we have a builder that we think would be a good fit for you. And then they make the connection. And then sometimes I just go in as a consultant to help, you know, direct the scope of the job. Cause as you know, like some people want a 7,000 square foot house and then realize that's out of budget when they really need a 3,500 square foot house. And I can go in early and try to, you know, direct them so that they don't walk away with a giant design that can't be built for their budget, regardless if I do it or not. Yeah.
How hard is that to have those conversations when you see something kind of going outside of the scope or the agreed upon budget, and all of a sudden it's escalating into something, you know, maybe not be achievable, or maybe it is achievable, but you know that based on their goal set, they don't even want to get to that point.
Yeah, I think I try to be as transparent as possible. That's one of the things that I think has served me well in my model is I'm very easygoing. You know, when I have a first meeting with a client, I joke and I'm like, oh, this is our first date. And they kind of giggle. And I'm like, well, I'm not kidding. Like, if we're going to be on a project for a year together, like, we're going to spend some time together. And like, I want to get along with you. So, you know, we're just going to kind of get to know each other in this meeting, and then we'll have a follow-up one and then see how that goes. So I think in those meetings with the architect and the clients, I'm just very clear about, you know, I understand what you want to do, but in all honesty, you know, this is what we're seeing in the field, and this is what that's going to look like before you even pick a countertop or a finish. And, you know, there's world of difference between a Lowe's $2 square foot tile and a, you know, tile shop $30 square foot tile. And that's, you know, way down the road, but you're already trending in a direction where you're overspending.
Now with the peer groups, going back to it, as you're thinking about, you know, realtors, you know, architects, designers, if, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're in New Hampshire, right, Chris?
Yes.
And so what, depending on your market, is one of those peer groups, has it been more beneficial than others for you as you built kind of your brand over the last while?
Yeah, I think the architect has been great. There have been some really cool projects brought to me by, you know, a couple of real estate agents that I'm friends with. We're in a fortunate area where, you know, we live around the largest lake in New Hampshire. It's, you know, basically the largest lake in New England. And it's a destination for people from all over the country. From, you know, we have a lot of second and third homes from California, Chicago, Florida, North Carolina. A lot of people summer here. So there's constantly, and there's only so much land. So people are now buying properties just to tear the houses down and then rebuild new ones. And in order to do all that, you know, you either need shoreland permitting, Department of Environmental Services, an architect, engineering, all those things to get your, you know, project done. So to be in that group and be, you know, one of the, you know, top few in the area servicing the lake with a good reputation, it's, you know, those, all those relationships pay off.
So why Black Tie Group? Where's that name from?
So I've lived in this area since 1999, and I've dealt with all the clients around the lake, you know, in my previous career. And the thing around relationships, I'll go back to that. But the thing around relationships with that is the groundwork I set working for those people in the service industry of just of taking care of them paid itself forward 15 or 20 years later when I opened my own business, and I can go back to those same clients that I had a good relationship with. And they're like, oh, we loved you when you were doing this. And, you know, you always took care of me. And now that groundwork that I created inadvertently and unknowingly 15 years ago serves well now. So when I first started this, it was more of a concierge property management style business where I was just catering to the people around the lake.
So when you first started Black Tie Group?
Yeah. So it was Black Tie property and lifestyle management. So I was basically catering to people that didn't have enough time to take care of their property on the lake. Just giving, you know, as we know, time is fleeting and it's like they're on vacation. Why do they want to spend time maintaining their house, taking care of their property, filling their boat with fuel? Like just call me. I'll handle all that. You just come enjoy your 2 weeks or 3 weeks that you're here. And then when you leave, I'll take care of the rest of it. And that just morphed into doing a good job at that. And then, you know, can you handle or facilitate, you know, a deck or a dock or an addition or a kitchen? And then we've just grown in that direction more. I still will facilitate some things, but there's enough property management companies around the lake now that it's kind of, you know, they can handle that. And I'm fine with not having any part of that.
I was just going to ask, because a lot of companies have been probably the reverse of you, right, Chris, that they start the construction company, they're building their arm. I had Andrew Patterson with Patterson Custom Homes way back when, and you know, he made the comment in the episode, he said, you know, it's like your tail gets so long as a builder. And if you're not maintaining this, you don't have a warranty department, you're not servicing it, you know, things come up. And so a lot of them will start a concierge service just to maintain it so they keep your reputation up. Whereas you're coming the other side. And so you alluded to this at some point. So now, before we get into your company today, are you still doing a lot of concierge, you know, since you started that way and you're now going into construction?
I am not currently, but I've had the request from clients to kind of go back that direction. Like, as you were saying, you know, offer them something. And I know Nick's doing it with home care. Mm-hmm. I think if I could find a driver for that van and have somebody do it, I would definitely open it up. But, you know, similar to you, my quality is priority. And if we can't do it right, I'm just not going to do it. So yeah, right now it's kind of shelved, but we'll see in the future if, you know, something does come back and we're full circle at that point.
So being that you're on the lake, I mean, most of your projects are around the lake, you know, new build, remodel, is there a percentage, kind of how normal project layout for you?
I am probably 80% remodel. I'd say only in the past couple years have we started doing any full new builds. And that's been, you know, in all honesty, probably a little bit of ego. I, you know, if we're breaking it all down, there's definitely more money in remodels regionally. There was just something for me about, I want to build a quality home. There's a lot of spec builders locally just flying homes up that are okay. And I just want to build a quality product. So I wanted to basically open that door and took on a couple just to, you know, see how it goes. And if there's a world where we can continue to do that while we're doing that, we're still doing remodels. So yeah, it's just something we're dipping our toes into, but long-term, I think that's a direction I would like to push, you know, if we could find the right fit.
It's interesting because, and maybe help me understand the mentality a little bit, which is totally fair. I think many of us get accused for chasing that shiny object in a sense that, you know, we love the chase, we love the sales process, you know, thinking of the company evolving to the next level, maybe the next project, maybe it's volume. I mean, there's so many different angles to it, but at the core, you know, there is an importance there to understand what's in your wheelhouse, you know, what you're good at, and, you know, to stay true to that. You know, how is that process different from you working on remodels to new construction? And do you feel that's enhanced your understanding of your business? Has it inhibited, you know, how does that break down?
Definitely a learning curve. I think, you know, aside from ego, there was this local stigma. Like, there's a lot of guys that have been around here, you know, way before 20, 30, 40 years before me. And they're the big hitters for custom homes. And for, you know, I've been fortunate to be in the same room or to be looked at, you know, against them for a project. And then, you know, I feel great about that. But sometimes the feedback is, you know, are you big enough? Do you have the experience to do these things? Like, you know, you do primarily remodels. And I can educate the client to a point and explain, like, honestly, remodels are more difficult than just building a new home. Mm-hmm. If I have to temporarily, you know, support your house while I'm taking out an exterior wall and opening that up 20 feet, the amount of understanding of construction to get that done without the house falling down is way more difficult than me just building it. So we could easily build a house. We choose remodels because it's our niche and we're good at it. And then I was like, man, I'm kind of just tired of hearing that on top of, I know we would do a good job at it. So I'm like, let's, you know, the next, you know, kind of referral that I got. And I kind of started pushing it a little bit with my local lumberyard. And then it was like, yeah, we could build a house, and we've done, you know, we're on our second one now.
It's incredible. So second build. And I think a lot of people listening can probably relate to that comment where you maybe interview with a new client and they'll be like, hey, you've only done remodels, when anyone that's done both, there's complications to both. There's no doubt that with the remodel, there's certain points of the project where you have to be heavily engaged, because there's a lot of Easter eggs you may find, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of little surprises as you're going through the build. And there's a lot of coordination. It's not as easy as, hey, if I have a really good new build ground up, if I have a really good spec book, if I have a good architect, if I have a good designer. You know, a lot of this is now just process and purchasing and lead time and coordination, you know, as opposed to, and I don't want to say it's not technical, but, you know, it's just different, as you mentioned, than a remodel.
Sure. Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, to your point of the carrot or the shiny thing, I think as the more you know, the better the questions are, right? So I start to engineer my year and kind of look at some goals. And if we're talking about bathroom remodels or kitchen remodels, and if I'm trying to get to a certain number in my year, and then I look at that, I'm like, oh man, that's 35 kitchens or something to try to hit that number, right? Or, you know, we could build two houses and do 10 kitchens and we hit that number. So some of it is that. And then looking at how long does it take to build that house? Do those numbers even work? You know, do we need, even if you sell that $1 million build, if it takes you all year to build it, then you really, you know, didn't do all that well either. So I think there's, you know, we need to break that down by the month and realize, oh, we should be out of there in 8 months to hit our numbers, or did it take us 14 and we missed? And then we've got to go back to the drawing board and reevaluate, you know, what we're doing. And I think that's some of the learning curve right now, to your point, is logistics. You know, did we order the windows at the right time? Did we order the siding at the right time? And then you realize it's a 6-week lead and you need it now. Or did you get the trusses delivered before the first floor was on? There's, you know, little things like that that I, you know, can definitely do better at. And I own that, you know, when my guys give me a hard time, like, how come we have trusses here and we haven't even put the first deck on? It's like, well, I didn't want them to be behind. And now, you know, we don't need them for another 3 weeks and they're tripping over them. But yeah, those are all things, you know, that are different from remodels. But yeah, I think there's a little less client interaction. I mean, I could go down a rabbit hole on the difference between, you know, remodels and new builds, but you know, to knock on someone's door every morning at 7:30 when they're in their bathrobe having a cup of coffee and it's like, good morning, and you know, petting the dog, shaking hands with the, like, that's a lot of work every day for 9 months. You know, new build, the guys come and go. They, you know, I might have to stop into the site once a week or once every 3 days or when they need something, but it's not like I have to be there every single day and, you know, talk about dust protection and why isn't the HEPA filter on and why aren't we sweeping at the end of the day. It's a little more breathing room in a new build than a remodel.
You made a comment though I thought was pretty fascinating, because you were saying, as I'm looking at goals and budgets and end of year, you know, I'm kind of quantitatively looking at, you know, this sale can cover this many projects. And so walk us through, because what's unique about that perspective as a business owner, maybe business owners are not thinking to that aspect of, you know, without getting into specific numbers, but as you think about metrics and the KPIs that you're monitoring, and you may know, Chris, it sounds like, hey, I know exactly what my monthly nut is to crack, right? To cover my overhead and break even. I know what, you know, how much can I bill to a job? What is my true overhead that's coming off my bottom line? When you made that comment, as you think about your business now, how involved are you in that financial planning aspect to understand sales to revenue and how that impacts, you know, just your cost to run the business?
Yeah, significantly more. And I think I talked about it, you know, with Nick, and it's, I think the first 2 or 3 years, you know, we did what we did out of accident. You know, we grew, we doubled every year the first 3 or 4 years, which the numbers were so small, that's easy to do. As they get bigger, and then you start to break things down by month or by week, and you start to employ more people, it gets a little bit more complicated, and it becomes more of a logistical thing for me. And that's always something, it's something I'm looking to work towards, you know, with your business model. And we've talked about that, where it's more of a managing things. Right now I just keep hiring people to do things that I want done. Like, I just started an electrical division, like hired, you know, bought a van, hired a master electrician, partnered with him, you know, because it's been so hard to find electricians and controlling schedules. So I'm like, well, now we'll just start doing foundations. Now we'll just start doing this. But it would be, it seems that there's, could be a better model where you find a good, you know, concrete subcontractor, you find a good framer, you find a good sider, you find a good whatever, and then you just kind of move the pieces around to make it all work. I would love to figure, you know, that's something I'm working towards right now, is there a world where I could manage building an entire house without using my crew that I own? So that's my next little test I'm going to try to do, is like sell another house and then try to just sub the entire thing out without using any of my guys and see, you know, if that's doable, without sacrificing quality. And that's right now my biggest fear. I get a lot of inquiries from people like, hey, we've got a framing crew, we've got a plaster crew, we've got an insulate. I'm really nervous to hire a framing crew and then just spend 2 weeks fixing mistakes or being out of code. Like, we have a really good reputation with the 2 or 3 local building inspectors, and yeah, I'm not sure how to make that jump yet. But yeah, that's where I'm leaning towards.
This episode is brought to you by Pella Windows. When it comes to building homes at AFT, almost every project has Pella Windows. And they've been just an incredible partner of ours. And locally, Sammy and Adam, they are not only amazing business partners behind us, but they are super close friends. And I speak on the podcast all the time about the importance of relationships, right? Relationships with our customers, with our vendors, with our suppliers. Because at the end of the day, I'm only as good as those that help our brand and assist us in our projects to take it from the ground up all the way to completion. And if we didn't have partners such as Pella, there's no way we'd be who we are today. Over the years, we've built this amazing relationship. When we call them or email them, they respond. They're quick. Their company culture, their integrity, their honesty. You know, they are always there to do what's right for us and the customer. They can do anything from small replacement projects to large custom homes and even multi-million dollar commercial projects. And also, when you think about their product line, they can do ultra contemporary, historical preservation, and large traditional projects. So for anyone, any scale, any size, they're the ones to call. They're here local. You know, they have an amazing Instagram. Make sure and give them a follow to see what they're doing. So if you need windows and doors, give Sammy and Adam a call. We stand behind Pella. We love what they do, their culture, their brand, and especially their quality. And if you want to learn more about Pella Windows, check our show notes. We'll have everything tagged there so you can give them a follow and have their contact information to reach out.
Our clients have worked with the Sub-Zero Wolf and Co. showroom Scottsdale on nearly every project. They make the process so easy for us and our customers with either an in-person or virtual consultation. They have dedicated consultants to answer questions, provide helpful solutions, and offer advice and assistance. When you are ready to embark on your kitchen journey, reach out to the Sub-Zero Wolf & Cove showroom, Scottsdale, who will tailor an immersive, rewarding experience just for you in their stunning showroom. Gather ideas, ask questions, and imagine how your dream kitchen might come to life. All catered to you in a low-pressure and highly inspiring environment. View an array of options and see what they look like in full-size kitchen vignettes. And attend a chef-led demonstration to see and taste these appliances in action.
I will say there's no doubt that, you know, skilled labor is tough to come by today. It's a lot different than it was pre-COVID, much different than it was pre-recession, and of course, 20 years ago. We've kind of seen a decline in, you know, trades out there. But my question maybe for you, Chris, when you said, you know, one of your concerns is, you know, to have a framer come in and are they going to perform to the same quality, you know, hit the code regulation? What would be different? And maybe I'm challenging you a little bit on this as opposed to your own guys. Like what makes a difference about how, when you have your own crew, are you overseeing it personally? Is it because you've trained them? Is it because you have protocol and systems in place? Otherwise, it would strictly be management where if Chris still has that same eye and understanding, if you're out there in the field as a super per se managing it, what's the difference to essentially get to the same quality from a sub that's not you and self-performing that is you?
So right now, I've got, you know, a couple good, I guess, call them leads. I've got guys that are paying attention that have been with me, you know, between 3 and 5 years. They know what I expect. And that's sometimes through trial and error. I think it's an interesting position that we're all in where we just have the critical eye, right? And I try to explain to them, like, I don't want to come here every day and just pick out all the things that you did wrong. And then over time, if we start to fix those, then I won't have anything to pick apart. Like I'll just walk on and be like, yep, that looks good. Like it's, you know how to do this. You know, we don't do this. You know that we, you know, put caulking down before we put the seal down, you know, mm-hmm. we're trying to do this new thing. Some of it's innovation, some of it's, you know, stuff we pick up and, training, and then we just start to incorporate it into how we do things. You know, how do we build a header? How do we, whatever those things are, and then we just kind of have a staple that gets checked on. And I think to your point, with a sub crew, I would have to be there more for sure. The other option is I take one of my guys that's really good and I park him on that job site as a super, and he walks around and tells them how we want things done. And we've had that conversation, and that may be how we try the first one.
Yeah. I can assure you that if you were to take a more managerial role, not that you're not managing your jobs, but you know, if you're subcontracting off your work, as you mentioned, that one of these days you're going to have a whole house that's not without any self-performance. The projects that are successful is, like I tell my team, it's, you know, it's, we're always playing offense, and by that, you know, site cleanliness is a small example.
Huge.
If you don't start from the beginning, it's impossible at the end. Right. And really what it comes down to when the trade partners come on site is just, hey, having a team meeting quickly, here's the cleanliness I expect. Here's the quality, right? Here's going to be the process. Here's the communication channel. Here's, you know, you kind of go through the whole job site layout and you walk through everything so that they know clearly what your expectations are. And of course it's backed by subcontracts and estimating and everything behind the scenes. But at the end of the day, if you're setting these clear expectations, ideally, and then as it's being installed, if you're checking it and checking scope and specs and making sure it's installed properly, ideally you're in a position where it is done right. Now, the reality is we know that we have to constantly check them, mm-hmm. as you and I know. But let me ask you this, because you mentioned that you have out of necessity and quality in the brand that you've built there with Black Tie Group, Chris, is that you mentioned, hey, recently even an electrician I started and there's a partnership. How do you create a partnership and how have you done that, you know, with some of these ancillary businesses that are feeding off the parent company, but are still in a beneficial way that, hey, you trust this guy to be a partner and you've set it up so, you know, we can make this successful.
Yeah. The funny thing about that is he was my project manager for the past 4 years with another company. So we already had our working relationship with that. And then he had a falling out with that company. And basically he knew that I was, for the past year, I had been kind of hinting around that I was probably going to do something. So as soon as that fell apart, he called me and was like, "Hey, are you still thinking about trying to do something?" And I was like, "Yeah, 100%. So I think within 3 days, I had a van and like working on getting fast. Lettered. Yeah, I'm like, let's go. But you know, it started off as a handshake deal, and then you know, I basically gave him a salary, like a guaranteed salary for the year, and then starting in 2025, he'll end up with like 48% ownership. I just wanted to keep enough of the thing to be the to controlling interest so that I could control the trajectory of the business, you know, assuming things aren't going well. But it's highly motivating for him because he's been in the industry 20 plus years and has always worked for somebody and always kind of had a ceiling. So now here's a chance where he slash we can grow it as much as we want. So if he wants two trucks on the road and four guys, then, and just wants to go back to doing, you know, managing projects and sales, there's a world that that can happen in the next couple of years. And now he owns, you know, a giant piece of it. So, you know, the long-term benefit for him is huge. And then he's also highly motivated or incentivized to do well. Because if it grows, it's only going to benefit him. And if it fails, then that's also on him.
So if I understand correctly, he, you know, this is someone that was working as an electrician, had good experience, you have a good relationship. And this is totally understandable. Someone that may not have the business acumen of starting a company and getting a truck and, you know, you know, setting up the LLC and insurance and, you know, payroll and everything that goes into it. Whereas you have this skill set, you already have most of these things in place. You bring him on, there's some skin in the game. There's an incentive. There's a game plan where he can increase ownership and essentially be responsible, but now there's some profit sharing. And so that's, of course, both of you are thinking, I'd imagine, as you're getting, you know, this moving along so fast.
Yeah, it's the benefit for, there was multiple things where I already had jobs lined up. You know, we had those two houses, we had some other remodels. So the work, you know, and we talk about some of the coaching I've had is like, if you've got a runway of jobs ahead of you, then you can be a little bit more selective about what you have coming in, or you can try some things different. And we already had enough work stacked up in front of us just from my current projects that I wasn't worried about keeping him busy. And then what actually happened is we took off pretty quick. And now through his relationships also, you know, we just hired a part-time master for 3 days a week to help keep up. So, you know, we're going on 2 months in. We started January 1st and we've got, you know, already a demand for some more help, and we could use, you know, probably a decent apprentice at this point. So it's looking good. And I think that's understanding your market. And then the other benefit for us is it adds value to our builds. Because I can, now we are the controller of, you know, that product also.
So end goal, when you look at, you know, a company such as electrical company you set up, is the plan to ideally self-perform all of your projects? Do you plan on bidding to other contractors? Kind of, you know, how do you see that scope changing?
We would definitely bid to others. I have no issue. I mean, similar to you with speaking with your other local builders, I've got a good relationship with, you know, 6 or 7. We even have like a, we call it a builder's banter breakfast. Like every couple months, 5 or 6 of us will get together at someone's house and just, you know, talk about what's going on and how things are going, things we're seeing, you know, maybe talk about people that we've hired or fired, or, you know, try not to reuse bad employees or whatever that is. So if any of them needed you know, an electrician or needed something, I would definitely be open to doing that. Yeah, for sure.
Do you think they'd have any pushback saying, hey, Chris is our competitor now, we're giving him more work?
I don't know. I mean, I think, I doubt it. We, similar to you, we would refer things to other builders depending on schedule and fit. You know, I a friend of mine has a really successful remodeling company locally, and he had a client that he had a big project that got extended or fell in his lap, and he had something lined up for a client and it got pushed. So he just said, hey, look, I don't think I'm going to be able to meet your timeline. Why don't you reach out to Chris and see if it's something he can get done for you? And you know, that turned into a working project. Like, that one's under contract and we're going to start that in the fall. So
now with accounting, do you keep accounting in-house or do you outsource it?
Right now it's in-house. It's on my list of things that I need to outsource as these things happen. Yeah. And then, you know, tearing them apart, you know, peeling them apart. Once you know, in the beginning with this partnership, it's like, all right, we're just going to keep it in-house, roll them into normal payroll. But yeah, by 2025, I'm going to have to figure out a way to peel that business out of this one and turn it into its own entity, books and all. So yeah, it'll be, those are big questions for, you know, people that I was actually going to ask you about that. Like, do you have partnerships outside of, you know, AFT, you know, obviously partnered to build a trend, but are you looking to be more diverse in your portfolio?
Yeah, really good question, Chris. And so when you mean more diverse, do you mean as far as setting up like other trade partners as you've done, you know, when I talk about outsourcing accounting or like other, you know, real estate ventures, I mean?
Yeah, like business, like would you own, want to be part owner or own other companies? Like, you know, you look at Nick with like owning a cabinet, part of a cabinet mm-hmm. company or part of a, you know, marketing company or part of a something. Are there things that interest you? You know, obviously you're plenty busy with AFT, but you know, for me, I look at that as like single line. And if that was to kind of get dried up or slow, mm-hmm. like what else would you want to have out there running that, you know, is pretty, you know, stable slash diverse?
You're 100% spot on. And, you know, I think a lot of my stuff, you know, I don't speak about a whole lot on the podcast. And so here you are, Chris, to ask me and we'll break it down. But, you know, I think proud of you, and I'll answer your question here in a second. But when you were speaking about starting the electrical company, you know, it's someone when I don't say you understand business, but you have a pretty good understanding of your business, Chris. So it allows you now to leverage that and to start another venture. And as you mentioned, you kind of are creating some bandwidth there, right? Very similar to me. You know, I love business. I think most of this podcast is circled around business, you know, with the different guests I have on. And so to answer your point, yeah, over the years, I've been involved in many businesses, including it. So AFT is one that most people know me for, know us for. You know, we have, we invested in an energy drink company. We have real estate in town. You know, we're looking at, I've invested in, you know, other subcontractors, just as you have, you know, the podcast. I mean, there's other platforms. I'm a huge proponent. I think for you and I that we're not super old, but we've lived long enough to understand, you know, construction is not the most stable industry and it's been pretty healthy for a while, but that's not always the case. And there's these up and downs, and you have to have brick and mortar behind you, and you have to have other assets so that you're not just, in other words, a paper contractor, that when there are no jobs, it dries up. Well, how do you keep your people busy? How do you retain them? How do you have diverse opportunities? And I've always looked at it where I have really good and talented people that work for me. So I want to make sure that we have opportunities for them to grow in their career. And, you know, that means in leadership, that's in financially. And so, yeah, from development to other companies to, you know, there's a lot. So I think you and I kind of along that way, there's a lot of things happening inside and outside the business that, you know, strengthen each other and allow us to be here for the long term. Because at the end of the day, you know, I want to serve my clients for the years to come. And the only way that's going to happen is if my doors are open and, you know, we're in a financial position to do so.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I obviously the glamorous big projects, you know, help with your reputation and getting your brand out there. But, you know, in the back of my head, I'm like, man, at the same time, like, you've got enough bandwidth where you could be building, you know, a small development or a small, you know, few houses in a community that isn't to the uber wealthy or, you know, so I'm like, you know, those things. And I think, you know, my next kind of move that I've been working on is, you know, with an investor. And do you want, you know, could we start doing some reasonable spec houses? We're in a unique area where the outside money has raised the cost of buying a home in this area to the point where, like, locals can't really afford it. And we've kind of, like, all kind of moved out away from the lake proper, I guess, like, within the couple miles of it. So it's, you know, the question is, like, can we build an affordable house that a local could afford? And right now I don't know that that's even possible. But it's definitely on my radar of something I would, you know, I'm interested in trying to see if we could do. And I think that's also part of these experiments with, and don't take that word the wrong way, with building these houses, is like, I'm tracking the cost very tightly to understand where is there money to be saved or shaved, in production or in purchasing, to maybe be able to build an affordable house. Because right now, you know, 2,000 square feet with a 2-car garage on an acre is like $950,000. And like, that's just not, you know, sustainable for, you know, my kids to buy when they graduate, or, you know, even a local person that's a framer or a plumber or something around here. It's not attainable.
Yeah. I mean, not to digress to this, but I think all of us have a concern. I mean, we've seen the cost of labor and material, and, you know, and with labor specifically, we understand how minimum wage and rates have been changing over the years. And there's no sign of that going down. If anything, you know, politicians are lobbying to increase, which affects cost. And you factor in interest rates that are high on top of that. And then it becomes a pretty high number for those looking to break in. And so I think it's a pretty complex issue that you and I will be dealing with the rest of our careers about cost of construction and, you know, building. And I know that's that can be a limitation and something to consider when going into development, as opposed to, you know, a custom build a suit.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's a lot of builders in our area. There's a lot of one or two people in a pickup truck. There's no, you don't have to have a license in New Hampshire. You can just throw a ladder on your truck and go to work if you wanted to.
Is that amazing? So,
yeah, I know. I mean, in some ways, isn't it? Because you could, no matter what, you could make a living. I mean, but to your point, yes, they put a lot of weight on the building inspectors to make sure that things are getting put together well. But there's a lot of things that get missed too. So, you know, I think that goes back to the big push in education and some sort of formalization and, you know, training and bringing back the trades. I think, though, you know, part of growth in I had talked to you about it before, but with these higher end clients, and obviously your business model of handling higher end people, it comes definitely with some added responsibility. And, you know, people will ask, like, oh, well, you know, you haven't been around that long. How have you grown so fast? Or how do you get into that market? And I think there's definitely, you know, I put some investments in early in appearance, you know, with making sure we had newer, cleaner trucks. We had, you know, clean trailers that were, you know, doesn't necessarily have to be wrapped, but, you know, decent advertising. You can't, you know, show up to a $4 million house in a, you know, $12,000 truck with rusty quarter panels leaking oil on their cobblestone driveway. Like, you're never going to get that job. So it's like, you've got to, you know, you have to, you know, have the appearance of wanting to be professional if you want to, you know, appeal to that client. And that comes with, you know, a lot of expectations, you know, around, like you're saying, cleanliness and zip walls and dust barriers and HEPA filters. Like, you will be called out and they will hold you to the fire if you don't, you know, make good on your promises. So there's some serious levels of expectation to meet if you want to, you know, play in that arena.
Do you feel it's worth the investment? I mean, how has that changed kind of maybe your appearance there in your market by having, you know, a good brand, you know, clean vans and clean, you know, brand of vehicles?
It's big. I mean, we have a good presence. People, you know, locally, the, you know, back to the real estate agents and other people in town. It's a small community. Especially the one, there's an island called Governor's Island on our lake that, you know, has some of the highest concentration of, you know, wealth in our area. And we do a lot of work on that island, but some people locally, builders, don't want to deal with it. They're just like, yeah, we're not even going to go on there and deal with the, you know, requests and all the things that come with that. And I don't mind it. You know, it's a little bit different. But I think in the end, like, you just treat them with respect, and typically it goes both ways. I mean, you can get some of them that are really difficult, but for the most part, I have, you know, have had good relationships with a lot of the clients, and that word of mouth has helped, because they tell the next person two doors down, and they tell the next person two doors down, and then, you know, all you have to do is take them to your last project. And a lot of times my clients are, you know, out of town or out of state, and they'll just let me bring them, you know, like, hey, can I bring over, you know, somebody from down the road? They want to look at the kitchen I just did for you. Oh yeah, no problem. You know the door code, like, just bring them in, blah, blah, blah. We look at the kitchen, and the client's like, oh yeah, this is exactly what I want. And then that kind of, it's like your own calling card.
So benefits, drawbacks, I mean, as you're working with the high-end clientele, which it sounds like you have most of your work there around the lake, pros and cons to just the clientele and the product you're putting out now?
I think, you know, meeting expectations. I'm pretty hard on my guys about house prep. You know, I think the things we've gotten hit on the most early on were just, to your point, cleanliness. Like, people expect, you know, things to be, it's paying attention to items like, oh, we're doing something in the bathroom. If they haven't put all their stuff away, then it's on us to, you know, maybe put their toothbrush in the drawer, put their, you know, whatever, put everything away either for them or while we're working on it. And then, if, you know, put it back. We do a lot of video and pictures before, because, you know, if they have a whole picture, like behind you, you've got all your stuff out. And it's like, if I was going to remodel your office or do something and all that has to go away, we video that whole space, take pictures of it. And then when we're done, you know, we put it all back the exact way. Every picture goes back where it was. The basketball goes back where it was. All those, like, those little things pay dividends. And they also will get your ASS handed to you if you don't do it. So it's like, yeah, those things you just learn each time. And then there's a bigger, you know, now it's like, okay, we know, you know, if it's a, you know, a lot of these high-end floors, if you've got $20 or $30 square foot wood floors with custom stains, like, yeah, we're going to put, you know, we use a lot of, like, foil fan fold, like, quarter inch insulation. We put that out, and then we put, you know, subfloor on top of that. We zip tape that. Like, even if somebody drops a hammer, like, those floors are going to be safe. And then it's just part of our house prep. But, you know, not everybody does that. You get a plumber that walks in and next doesn't take his boots off and tracks dirt through their house. And then you look like, you know, the bad guy, because you hired him. So there's a lot of responsibility that lands on the GC to make sure that that project, you know, is prepped for everybody.
Yeah, but essentially, as you mentioned, because the clientele you're working for is customer experience, right? And
yeah,
that example you gave where you're taking a video and everything's going to be put in its right spot. I mean, that is, that's why they're hiring you, the Black Tie Group, right? That's the concierge that they want. And, you know, that's how you appeal and build a brand by, you know, picking up on those little things and serving the client. And that's what they're looking for.
100%. Yep. Yep.
So, you know, and along in your market, you know, and with your background, Chris, you know, we talked about this before, you know, thank you for your service, you know, as
appreciate
Marine veteran there.
Yeah.
How has, you know, your military background, how has that played a role in your company and focus on life and leadership? And, you know, what do you attribute now to what you learned, you know, your time as a Marine?
I think, you know, attention to detail for sure. You know, the idea of, you know, not just doing something until you get it right. You just do it until you don't get it wrong. The amount of, you know, redundancy in our training so that, you know, it becomes muscle memory and there is no thinking. I think that with, you know, our uniforms are always very squared away and our barracks, we had, you know, white glove inspections just for fun. I mean, that would take a couple of days. And if they found dust anywhere, like they'd pull drawers out, flip things over. So I'm a pretty good cleaner. I think it's, you know, having that critical eye and, just wanting things to be done right. Like I want a clean truck regardless of the business that I'm in. Like I want, you know, just certain things that I like to keep well. And I think if that lends itself, you know, to our business model and how I want things to be run, I think the other parts of the service that helped me is probably dealing with the chaos, right? There's just a lot of moving parts, multitasking. I mean, I don't know if any of us are good at truly multitasking, but being able to think under pressure and manage expectations and not feel like things are getting out of control, you know? 'Cause we could get super stressed over every little thing, but to realize like that, well, this isn't the end of the world. This is still a business, although we all take it very, very, very personally, and that there have been harder things we've done in our life. So we can just problem solve this. And then I think just being able to adapt and overcome things, there's just a lot of mental fortitude in the Marines where you think you're only moving, you know, 20 clicks, and then now you're moving 25, and like whatever you expect it's going to be something different. So don't get so wrapped up in this little thing, because I promise you it's going to change. And that is construction in a nutshell.
I think that mindset is something that's often overlooked. I know we don't speak about enough in construction. I was just in the field with some of my supers and we're out in the field and we've all been there. I mean, there's days in construction where you're so overwhelmed. It's like, here's an issue. There's an issue. This is blowing up. As you mentioned, there may be a client or whoever that's frustrated. You may be dealing with a design team member and, you know, and so these mistakes happen. And, you know, I think every super has probably had that moment where they're just like, you know what, I could just walk off this job. I don't need this. You know, it's like the stress yes. is too much. And that's where you're saying, you know, the military background, there's no walking off really. I mean, you're committed and you're all in. And you know, there's part of that mental health aspect that applies into that day-to-day grind that, you know, we live in the trades that most people that haven't done it just don't realize.
No, I think, yeah. And it's a high functioning business. Like, and I think that's to the idea of the you know, public's perception of construction not being professional, right? And I think that's a big push with modern craftsmen and just our industry as a whole. And I talk to my guys about that. And I talk to my clients about that, why does a lawyer get paid for every minute that you talk to him? You know, why does a doctor bill you for not showing up? Like we provide a professional service and whether you want to look at it that way or not, you know, that's something as an industry we need to do better. And if we want clients to look at us as professionals, then we better start acting like professionals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that is some of the way that we carry ourselves, right? I mean, including, you know, clean jeans and clean boots and like, you know, just carrying yourself better as a professional, you know, goes a long way and helps our industry when we're, you know, seeing increased wages and cost of, you know, building increasing. You know, there are people out there that don't see the value, and how do we show them that, you know, AFT and Black Tie Group are worth the money that we're, you know, quoting them.
So what's keeping you up at night?
Ooh, usually details of projects. Sometimes, you know, am I going to hit the numbers that I want to hit? I'd say, yeah, it's either financial or details. But yeah, the way my brain functions is I see a lot of things three-dimensionally. So I will design a lot in those like weird hours of sleep. I don't know what you call them, but you're not asleep, but you are asleep. And I'll, you know, wake up in the morning and call one of my leads and be like, oh, I just came up with this design. We're going to slip that over that and slide that under there. And I want this to be over here, and we'll tuck that piece of thing there, and we'll hide the tile. And they're just like, what the heck? So yeah, those details will, you know, keep me up, you know, where I think that's, don't want to say I'm probably too involved, but you know, we're doing like a lighted niche on a shower right now. And it's okay, how thick is the, you know, channel that LED strip is going to be in? And, you know, is that marble that we're going to put on that shelf, is that going to be recessed? And is that going to be a quarter inch below that? And what is all that? And did we get the wire? And then, so those things, you know, crossing those T's and dotting those I's, I just want to make sure that they're, you know, being done right. And the aesthetic is going to be there when we're done.
Yeah. It's incredible. Well, Chris, you've been amazing. I mean, there's so much to it. And I know we can only touch on a brief amount here in this hour, but what's upcoming and exciting for you guys? And also, what do you do for fun?
Ooh, we've got a really cool porch demo remodel as part of like an antique home that's going to have a copper roof and a bunch of skylights and some accordion windows and an indoor-outdoor fireplace that's coming up. I've got a really cool commercial remodel coming for Live Nation at our local concert venue. So I'll be posting about that coming up, but we're doing some VIP box suites with two bars, which are going to be really cool. I think those are my big ones on the front. For fun, I am working on getting my pilot certificate.
Oh, so good that's for you. Been,
yeah. There's a, the flying part's fun. The studying is monotonous. It's memorizing a lot of codes and terminology, but yeah, that's been something I've wanted to do since I was a kid and just haven't financially been able to bite the bullet to do that. And in the past year, I'm like, all right, we're just gonna do it. It's gonna make it happen, no matter what.
How many hours do you have in the air?
I've got like 44, which is enough for my minimums. I've done my solos. I've done my couple, they call them cross countries, but just means flights over 150 miles. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I have a written test and a check ride away from my certificate. So
it's incredible.
Yeah, probably a month or two away. I'm excited.
Oh, that's super exciting. So, well, good for you, Chris. Yeah. That's incredible. What a goal. So for those listening, where can they find you?
You can find me at blacktiegroupusa.com or black_tie_group on Instagram.
Well, Chris, appreciate you. Appreciate the friendship.
You too, man. Same thing. Thanks for having me on.
If you get value from the show, please support us by giving a 5-star rating and review on whatever platform you listen to. And I also have a favor to ask. We've had some incredible guests that come on and share their wisdom, their knowledge about their business. So if you have friends or family members that could benefit from those episodes, please share it with them, as well as any other business owners that you're networking with that could get value from the podcast or certain episodes. Please share those as well. Again, subscribe, make sure you're following. Any questions that you have, topics, we've had listeners reach out about certain guests that we should have on the show. Again, brad.l@aftconstruction.com. email me for topics to address, guests that we should have on, and even if you think you'd be a great guest for the show. So again, thank you for all your support, and we'll see you next time.